Hello and welcome to The Sound Off, a podcast where school safety takes center stage. My name is Michelle Gay, and I'm the co-founder and executive director of Safe and Sound Schools. We're committed to protecting every school and every student every day. In this episode, we discuss the complex world of grief and how it affects individuals and families, especially in the wake of tragedy. Before we dive into our discussion, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors for their support. This season of The Sound Off is brought to you by the Door Security and Safety Foundation, which advances the critical role of certified professionals in creating safe and secure building openings. For more information and to locate an expert, visit www.doorsecuritysafety.org. Joining me today is my Safe and Sound Schools co-founder, Alyssa Parker. In our conversation, we catch up while exploring the non-linear and often unpredictable nature of grief, how it shows up in everyday life, and the coping strategies that can help navigate this challenging journey. Well, hello, Alyssa. Welcome to The Sound Off.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Well, we're here because of you, I have to say. Sound Off, those of you who have been with us at Safe and Sound for a long time may remember that The Sound Off was Alyssa's baby.
It was.
Something that she envisioned, created, got us started on. And so it's really awesome to have you joining us here today. And just checking in, it's been a while and a lot of our community members are like, how's it going? How's Alyssa? And so, you know, good to have you here with us.
Yeah, it's good to be back. I'm glad that it continues to go and you guys keep pushing out good stuff. So
yeah, we're getting there, you know, we're growing. But you know, you're always a big part of it, always a part of the fabric of everything we do. So that makes it special to have this time together. But I'm going to torture you like everyone else and ask you to share your super secret superpower. What is something that most people don't know about Alyssa Parker? Something that is kind of a fun fact, odd fact, stupid human trick. What is it that would surprise our folks?
It's actually kind of embarrassing.
It's, ooh, even
it's
better.
Kind of something that like only my family hears about. But I have the weirdest retention for actors and actresses in movies.
Their faces?
Yeah. And I know what movie they've been in. It's kind of like the Kevin Bacon game. You know, the old Kevin Bacon game was like, you know, you can trace everyone back to Kevin Bacon, but I can do it with like everyone. And it's so embarrassing because I forget so many things and yet my brain retains this and I didn't pick it. And I don't know why. I don't even care. But yeah, I have this great ability to just know where they're from. I can tell you anything that they've been in. I'll be like, they were in this and they were in this. And my kids get so annoyed because I'll even just hear voices from, you know, a cartoon and I can tell you that's this actor.
That is the best.
It's so useless.
Like, you know, it is, I'm telling you, there's got to be a use. Like at some point you might be like 99 and you'll be like, you know, like it'll come in handy. It'll save the day.
I think the only thing that comes in handy is like, it's embarrassing that I know who is who in movies that are not even my age. Like I'm not even interested in. And so I can follow conversations with my teenage daughters about whatever show they're interested because for whatever reason, I know who they're talking about.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for sharing that little stupid human trick. Those are just the best because we talk about a lot of deep stuff here on The Sound Off. And it is always good to just remember that at the end of the day, we're just people, all of us. And there are funny little things about us that make us unique and help build those connections, which are so awesome. So we are going to talk about grief today, and it is timely because you and I are, our families are in December here, you know, December 2023, you know, moving. I found myself saying, you know, I'm moving through this month.
Yeah.
And every time we approach December, there are things we try to do to prepare ourselves and try to, you know, reframe some of the difficult aspects of December as we approach the year mark of the tragedy of the loss of our beautiful girls and their friends and teachers. And I feel like for my part, I get a little bit stronger, you know, each year. You and I have talked a lot about how we do the work.
Right.
And I think we put a lot of work into it. Our families put a lot of work into it. We communicate a lot. We read a lot. We go to therapy. We do kind of out of the box things, whatever it takes to move ourselves forward. I think it's appropriate today to just sit with that grief for the good that it is for us, the healthy process that it is for us. And, you know, some of the realities, to acknowledge those realities, most people joining us today have their own grief experiences, their own loss experiences of some kind, of some level. And so I would love for us to just talk about that journey. It's not all bad. There have been some beautiful, beautiful moments that we have shared as part of this grief journey. So let's talk about what it is. You know, if you ask, gosh, 10 people what grief is, you might get 10 different answers. But for you, what's grief? What's the process? What's it all about for you?
You know, for me, grief is a very fluid process. It's definitely a journey, but it's a fluid one. It's not linear. It has movement. And sometimes that movement is backwards and then forwards and then under and then over. It's all over the place. And I really didn't understand that, even though I had some degree of loss prior to, well, I would say prior to
my dad. You had a major loss before, yeah.
Yeah, my dad passed away a couple of months before Emily, and I think that was my first big loss. Yeah. So to have both of those back to back, I mean, I was swimming in grief. Yeah. And prior to that, though, I did look at it as a temporary thing, as a thing that, mm-hmm. you know, you have a mourning period. You wear all black, right? And then you get out of it and you're fine. And obviously anyone who's lost anyone knows that the grief process is a forever process because you forever miss that person.
And I think they're always missing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think one of the best things I ever heard was someone had quoted someone from my church saying that the reason it still hurts or the reason that grief takes time is because the person who you've lost has a piece of your heart. And until you're reunited with them, your heart will never be back together whole. And so you're always feeling that part is missing. Mm-hmm. And yet there's something to hope for and something to look forward to when that can be whole again, based on, you know, what our belief system is, that, you know, we'll be mm-hmm. able to see our loved ones again. And so that was always helpful for me, but it kind of helped me come to terms early on with the fact that, oh, this is a long journey.
Yeah. You remember some of our early conversations were like, you and I both share this sort of like, we're very like fact oriented and timeline and checklist. And that's kind of how we survive motherhood and all of these other family life and all of that. And I remember us being like, what is the timeline here? Because I can't sustain this. I can't. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm going to, like, how does anyone live with this feeling? You talked about swimming. It was like drowning, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's a really good analogy. Just absolutely over my head. I can't keep up. I can't, you know. And so I remember us, we met with, like, somebody came, some big wig came into the community to tell us all how it was going to be. And we were like there with our pens and pencils and notepads and like, you know, okay, so how's this go? You know, and the most gut-wrenching thing to hear was that, first of all, you're not going to be able to do anything for at least the next 3 months. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. They were like, there's no therapy. There's no nothing. You're just here in this for at least 3 months. And I was like, I can't conceive of this for 3 months. Mm-hmm. It was so difficult, so unbearable. And that was like the dawning for me, just like you said, like, oh boy.
And it's an interesting feeling because I think that I've missed people. I've been sad that I've lost people, but this was different in the sense that I felt like I was in a fight or flight mode. Like my hypervigilance and anxiety in my stomach caused me physical pain that I could not stop feeling. It was just all day, every day. And that probably lasted, I mean, at least a solid year. Just feeling that every day. And then eventually it starts to taper off, but the physical pain was there. But the fact that because you're feeling that, it's so hard to be able to focus on anything else. So everything that got my attention got half of my attention or a third of my attention, whatever I was capable of giving, because so much of my attention was just trying to function while feeling that intense emotion all of the time. And I think that, you know, is why your memory shot, why you can't follow through anything, why you don't answer a text, why you don't respond to an email, why you don't wash your hair, all those things, because it's all consuming in the beginning.
And I think it's so interesting too, because I remember other people around us that were there to support us. And I remember talking to one family member, and, you know, they hadn't lost a child, but they knew you and I. And there were times when you and I could be, we could have a fully functional conversation. I mean, we crazy ladies, you know, founded Safe and Sound 6 months after the tragedy, you know? And so I just remember, like, this person was just like, what's wrong? You know, how come, why is this hard? You know, like, because this thing just happened, this horrible thing just happened, and it's going to be with us for forever. So we're not normal. Like, we might look normal right now having a normal conversation with you, but there's all this other stuff happening all the time behind the scene, behind these eyes, you know, and with our families. I like what you said about the everything got half of my attention, because I think that kind of illustrates, yes, you were like motoring through packing lunches for your surviving daughters. You know, you were doing the grocery shopping for your family. You were working really hard to keep the laundry going, or, you know, whatever it was, holiday, all those things that are expectations of us as parents and especially as mothers. But is it your joy, this joy that it was before? And, you know, are you remembering that permission slip that, you know, you had to send in? And it's an incredible burden. It's like you're trying to do all those things with one hand tied behind your back. You just can't. You can't do it.
I look back and I think that the things that are still the hardest to forgive myself, because there is a forgiveness part that comes with the things you couldn't do during that time. And I think for me, I look back, and I was so limited because my kids were very young. My surviving kids were 3 and 4, almost 5. So after Emily died, I mean, they were still needing their mom, that there was so many things I couldn't do. I couldn't play with them for a very long time. I loved crafting and I loved sewing. And every time I thought of doing them, I wanted to throw up.
Yeah.
I mean, just the bare minimum of playing with my kids, I couldn't do for a very long time. That took a lot of therapy to get there. And I feel kind of bad because things that I really loved, I lost all flavor for. So I think that's also a huge part of grief, is that you change as a person, your pain changes you. Just like the basic things, like Robbie and I both were really into sports, and neither of us played sports, taught our kids to dribble a basketball, play catch. And my kids, bless their hearts, I mean, Madeline's got a little more than Samantha, but neither of them had the exposure that we had anticipated for them. And so when they did do sports, they were so behind because, like, we didn't engage with them the same way that I think I would have otherwise. And, like, there's things like that that I look back and I have to forgive myself for, because those weren't things that I would have probably done if this hadn't have happened. And so there is that kind of loss, like, you grieve who you were in addition to grieving the person that you lost. So it's very layered.
It is very layered. And I think if you asked, you know, any of our other families of loss, or even other parents of loss, I think they would probably all speak to that, you know, because they were in survival mode. You know, you guys were in survival mode, just like, how do we survive this day and get the girls where they need to be and make sure they have eaten their meals and we have met their basic needs? And, like, that's where you are. You're like at the bottom of Maslow's pyramid, you know, there's no sports or self-actualization or, you know, like, it's the reality of that family grief journey, you know, and it takes on such different shapes, I would say, like as you all grow and move through this process, you know, your girls were babies and now they're teenagers, right?
It's so interesting too, because the comment I got so often when people found out about, you know, Emily dying the way that she did, and then looking at my really young girls, the comment I got all the time was, "You're so lucky that they are so young." And I kind of wondered, like, I'm like, am I lucky? Like, is this a good thing? Like, and it's been interesting having this spectrum. We're like a big science experiment, right? The Sandy Hook families, because we're all in different stages. My kids happen to be really young. There's a group of us that fit into that range. And then there's a middle range and then a little bit older range. Yeah. And as the years have turned and I watch all of those kids, there is not a bit of truth to that. Partly because at every stage, something has been stunted. It doesn't matter what the age is. Something has happened to you. A trauma is a trauma no matter what age. And there is ripple effects because of that.
Yep.
And you can't escape it. It doesn't matter.
And as long as they're children on top of it, it doesn't matter what age, because all of childhood is very complex to begin with, right? Like even in the best of circumstances, right? You don't have the tools. Mm-hmm. Let's face it, we as adults didn't have the tools for what we were dealing with, the tragic loss of our beautiful girls. And it was such a complicated form of grief, losing your child and losing your child in the most unthinkable circumstances.
Yeah.
All of those complexities. But yeah, I just think our kiddos especially, didn't matter if they were college age, as some were young adults. My girls were kind of end of elementary, about to head into middle school. And like for my girls, you know, you were talking about things that you have to forgive yourself for. I just feel like they lost that like childhood innocence. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. We had this very innocent childhood going for them in Newtown.
Right.
We played outside most of the time. They were not yet caught up in a lot of the typical preteen kind of materialism. It was a pretty simple life for the most part. And then my family moved to another town and it was like they lost like 5 years. They had to be these little grown-ups almost immediately.
And I even saw that with our oldest that was just turning 5, because she took on the big sister role because her big sister was gone. And now she felt like she had to step into that. And so she, without me even saying a word to her, I never even mentioned it or said anything about it. Of course I wouldn't have, but she personified this like whole demeanor of the older sister as soon as she passed away. And there was a cost there. There was a loss for her. There was that innocence that you're talking about that.
Yeah, she was the carefree middle daughter and she could be a little stinker from time to time and that would be cute and acceptable and expected even. But now she sort of had to put on that mantle that Emily represented.
Yeah. And for years, you know, it was so hard to tell her, you have to stop parenting your sister. And she had never done that before, you know, and that was part of her anxiety, I think, too. And like all of a sudden, the world's not safe. It was this realization, like bad things happen to us and can happen to us. And it's my job to protect her because our sister's gone. You know, if I happened to not be holding her sister's hand while we were walking in a parking lot, she would yell, "Hold her hand, you're not holding her hand," you know, any of those kinds of things. There's a million examples of that, but that's what you're talking about, that they had to grow up.
You just said something I think that's really important to talk about in this conversation, and that's anxiety. I know my grief journey has been fraught with a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
And I'm watching my girls and my husband, you know, I don't think they would be secretive about it either. Anxiety has been a constant theme in terms of this grief. So I think that's an important thing to tease out in the conversation.
Well, I think that our anxiety was very complicated because on top of our children dying in a very, what should have been a very safe place, or the expectation that it was a safe place, having that illusion shattered that it could happen anywhere and kind of looking at your world around you a little bit darker, you're not as naive. on top of that, the layers of, for us specifically, all of our families had the conspiracy theory layers to it. And so we were getting letters.
Still going on, right?
Still going on. And, you know, having people see me and then send me emails or letters saying, I just saw you in line at the post office with your child, and I think you're a liar. You know, like, you're feeling watched all the time, and you don't know that people are watching you. You have no idea. There was this level of feeling threatened a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And that causes this extreme anxiety. And then we moved away. And when we moved to Portland, and we had someone who had already been arrested for harassing our family get out of jail, and he lived near us, and started sending threatening letters to our house again. And having to go to your child's school with a printout of a person and saying, if this person comes, you must immediately call 911. Do not let them, you know, like, I mean, it was like, I'm already stressed sending my kid to school.
Under the current circumstances.
The current circumstances. And then now on top of it, I have to worry about the general public not knowing who's okay. And of course, there's the flip side to it. We had lovely people who were so considerate and sweet and wanting to hug you at every moment, but that also can cause anxiety, you know, like being prepared to comfort someone else who's grieving your loss because they were affected by it. And of course, I understand why, but it's made me so much more aware of how I react to other people who have lost, that I am not taking energy away from them, because there are so many different ways that you can cause anxiety and angst to someone else who is going through things through expectations.
Yeah.
You know, filling that expectation from people causes anxiety. So it was very complex, and it's something that to this day, you know, we work on it, but it's still there. It's still a part of it, because those outside,
they're like uncontrollable variables, you know, they're just like,
that's a great way to put it. Uncontrollable variables.
Cause we're planners, you and I, you know, like, what can we do to best set everybody up for success? You can have the best laid plan as always. And it's just crazy town. And I think part of that that's unique to your grief journey, my grief journey, all of our Sandy Hook families, is that this was such a national, international, the spotlight was on our loss. So, you know, if it had been different circumstances and it was just one of us who lost a child in a tragic car accident or something like that, that would still be the most earth-shattering beginning of a lifelong grief journey for us in those circumstances. As parents who have lived and are living that will tell you. But the added component of people feeling like they know your child.
Right.
And know you. And they have needs of you because they're suffering, as you pointed out, like they're hurting, they're mourning, they're grieving because they have, in a sense, lived this on TV.
Right.
And there is a level of connection that, like it or not, happens in this world that we're living, where you could be living in Europe and you're watching this horrific story unfold across the seas and your heart is breaking and you're grieving for those parents and those families. And I mean, gosh, we're doing that right now with tragic events unfolding overseas right now. And so there is a level even of the sort of a collective grief. And that is definitely part of that complex weave that you're talking about.
Well, and I think everyone wants to find common ground. That's how we connect as humans. I think that's how we navigate social situations, is to immediately talk about what we have in common, what can we share and connect with. And so anytime it would come up with anyone, their common ground, because I mean, they're kind of caught off guard, and people are caught off guard by unexpected deaths. When you're talking to someone who has had an unexpected death, people don't always know how to react or respond to your trauma or your grief or whatever happened to you. And so they go to what do they have in common, because that feels safe. And
they want to show empathy. They want to show that they care, you know?
That is just by default what we do as humans. And it's really hard when you're the person on the receiving end and you don't really want to go there. you're exactly. not really in a place where like, this is actually yeah. kind of hard for me to talk about and you want to go there.
I know, like I kind of just got myself all put together to do the grocery shopping. I was hoping to just live in a normal space for a minute, you know? Yeah.
Like this one time we were at one of our daughter's concerts for school and it was in an elementary. So it was in this huge gym and the parents just, you know, pile in. And I went to the bathroom and I came back and there was this mom that was sitting next to us and she had been doing parent pickup with us every day. You know, I would stand next to her. Our kids were in the same class. And so we would just chit chat. And so she got to know me and Robbie, my husband. And so I had gone to the bathroom and I came back and she's hugging Robbie, just hugging him like a very intense like hug. And I immediately go, oh, she found out. And that's a moment where I wouldn't be emotionally like prepared to go there.
Did you go back into the bathroom?
I almost did. I almost were like, well, that's on him, I guess. No. Because also part of navigating grief is coming up with your own boundaries on how you want to share or talk about things. So one of the things that's difficult for Robbie and I, we have boundaries on what we will say to different things, like how many kids do you have? Those basic yes. like, questions that come up, you have to figure out your own comfort zone. And so some people will just say, you know, I have two girls at home.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to try it all on. I've tried it all. And so I know that sometimes people just say things that we have already tested and they say it and you're like, I'm going to have to answer this way because this I feel like I have to answer this way.
Yeah.
But I don't really want to because I know what you're going to find out and where this is going to lead.
We're going to open up Pandora's box, right?
Yeah. And I know that's what happened with him in that situation. So you have to create that space for people when they find out, and you have to give them grace for how they're going to awkwardly react to you.
Yes.
And so that is anxiety ridden, all of that.
It is.
So that's why you see a lot of people struggle when they're grieving, being in social situations, because all of that is difficult.
It's all landmines.
It is.
They're all waiting for you. The how many kids do you have? And, you know, what are you going to do for the holidays? And, you know.
And you know where, like, each question leads, they build. So
they
it
do.
Piques someone's yes. curiosity. So then they ask the next question and they ask the next one. And you're like, oh, you just don't want to do this. But I've seen it with other people who are grieving other kinds of losses too, you know,
yes.
I see the same moments in them and I feel a lot of empathy because no one is meaning anything by it. No one no. knows what they're about to step into and we aren't really good at knowing how to respond. And I have made those mistakes tons of times with people and
yes.
I wish I could redo so many conversations knowing what I know now. Right. And so I've had to learn to give people grace, people I've observed and people who have done it to me and my own mistakes that yep. I have made. I have to give grace because we're not really good with the awkward. We have go-to things that it's human nature. It's culturally what we do to make things better. And sometimes it can make the person on the receiving end feel a little awkward. But
oh, totally. And then there are some truly wonderful,
yeah.
peaceful, beautiful moments of remembrance and just joy. That's something that nobody told us about in the beginning that I really would have liked to know. I probably would have thought they were crazy, but
that there's joy in the small moments. Yeah.
Yeah. I would have liked to know that. I would have liked to know, like, I know you don't feel like you'll ever smile mm-hmm. or laugh again, but you will, and you'll even like belly laugh and you'll truly be able to celebrate your loved one on her birthday.
Yeah.
And it will be a celebration. Like it will always have a little bit of a tinge to it for sure, but you will draw closer and closer to that loved one through this process. And there's so much joy and love to be had for that connection.
It's true. And I think what you develop when you have loss like this is a different kind of superpower. You were talking about, you know, super
yeah.
funny superpowers, but the superpower you develop during grief is that you can feel very different emotions all at the same time.
Yeah.
And all of them are okay. So you can still continue to feel the grief, the loss, the pain, and still feel the happy and laugh belly out loud, and you're feeling them simultaneously. Like that, I mean, everyone was capable of that at any stage in their life, of course, but this was mm-hmm. like on steroids. It was just big.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know I had the capacity to feel such complex emotions at the same time. It was a very jarring thing, and it felt unnatural in the beginning, I would say. And there was a lot of guilt associated with that. And I had to learn how to come to terms with feeling them, that one doesn't negate the other, and that both are welcome, and that it's mm-hmm. okay. And learning how to just embrace what I was naturally feeling and not to feel like I had to correct an emotion, if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. Now, I want to say nobody had the tools to deal with what we were dealt that day, December 14th, the loss, the violence, the horrors. Nobody had tools for that, but everybody had something to draw upon. And, you know, your family and mine, I think we have some of those tools in common. So I think it's good to highlight those, because I think this world is unpredictable. Mm-hmm. It just is. And it's not rosy and safe all of the time. So, and we just don't know. But there are things that we can put into our lives that can help us provide a little cushion, help us carve a path. Those are those tools in the toolbox. So what are some of those things that you would share from your grief journey that were those game changers for you, that were those things that you could draw upon? They weren't going to fix it, but they could certainly help you maybe navigate a little bit better.
I would say those pillars are, you know, my faith, leaning upon my religious background and just my relationship with God and my Savior. Those things were a huge, huge support for me. And then utilizing people around me. I was horrifically blessed that I had other family members that I was able to utilize. But when we moved and I didn't have those anymore, I had to find someone who had common ground with me, right? Like people that had that understanding and that shorthand with me. So that was mm-hmm. always very helpful. Getting group therapy was very helpful for me. And it's not mm-hmm. for everyone, but having even just a friend that has gone through it, and then becoming that friend for other people as losses, because they happen around us. And so being able to have that common ground with people. And then therapy was huge. I mean, I've been off and on seeing therapists this whole time. And so it's...
And different ones too.
Different types of therapists. Yeah. You know, in the beginning, it was like talk therapy, and that was great. And that helps me really come to terms and understand my own thoughts, my own feelings. But then I think the second layer, and this has come later on, was, oh, I have to do trauma work and do trauma yeah. therapy. I really just didn't understand like the level of trauma that I had been through, because like it's not something you would classically look at as mm-hmm. this is an arena in which you have some really strong PTSD issues.
Yeah. And it makes you do really weird things.
It does. And it makes you respond really weird ways yeah. to things. Like I have hypervigilance all the time. You know, everything yep. makes me feel like my emotional reaction feels like, oh my gosh, this is the most intense thing. Like I was talking about yep. that pain that you feel from that adrenaline rush, the anxiety, the sickness in your stomach, you know, the smallest little thing would cause that for me. And I did not realize that that was part of, I mean, to some degree, I knew it was because I'd been conditioned at that point and I knew it wasn't normal, but I hadn't really thought about doing therapy for that specific thing. Mm-hmm. And so I found a trauma therapist. And so I've been working for a few years with a trauma therapist, which has been helpful, but there's still layers. And then I had to see a different kind of specialist for a little while doing different kinds of therapies. It's interesting because I am simultaneously going through that, but then I'm watching my kids, right? And I am seeing, you know, we were talking about earlier how people would say, you're lucky your kids are young. Well, my kids were young and couldn't verbalize anything they were feeling. and didn't know how to deal with what they were feeling. They were feeling intense feelings. And yeah, maybe they didn't have the awareness that me as an adult had, but that only meant that they couldn't communicate what they needed. So they developed coping mechanisms to deal with that, because they're feeling the intense emotions. And so as a parent, you can see that.
Some healthy and some not, yeah, right?
Exactly. It's a mixed bag. Some things I'm like, good, you know, we taught you through modeling that that was the healthy thing, but there's plenty that you don't even have to model for them to pick up. Or maybe you did model, not knowing you were modeling it, exactly, and they're picking up on it. You know, it's just, it's kind of all of it. And the hardest part about that is, you can't force them to open up to someone in therapy. You can say, I'm going to take you to this therapist. You should talk about this. But until they're ready.
We're still not there with one of ours.
Same. We're still not there. It's really difficult when you see other people going through a grieving process and you can't force them to do anything. That's their journey. And I think as a mother, that is very hard to let go of. To say, I can't fix that. I can't make you do the work because you're not capable of doing the work because it's not the right time for you.
Yep.
And not being in control of that, I think, is really difficult.
So hard. We just keep making those resources available.
Yes. I mean, and that's all you can do is encourage and keep talking and saying what's helpful and encouraging when you see the good things. And having those resources always available to them. But I mean, even like, you know, my own family with my dad passing, you see things when you do a lot of your own soul searching and you learn the correct ways. And when you see other people around you that you love and you want to say, hey, I've been there. I know that's tough, but this is what it did to me. And it wasn't so good. And it wasn't so healthy. And that's not always what people didn't ask. And learning to like share your experiences when someone wants to know them, like understanding those limits, because I had people try and throw at me what helped them. And I wasn't in a receiving place at that time. And
no, it's like, good for you. Yeah. Now leave me alone.
That it's almost like you want to just roll your eyes at them.
I'm perfectly fine with my ice cream and cookies every night. Just leave me alone. Yeah.
Right. And so you learn through your own experience too, where to have boundaries with other people, and that the best way to navigate is to have patience for someone to ask them. Maybe they never will, but you have to accept that.
That was another thing I feel like that was a discovery. And you and I've talked about this before, the power of presence for us when hurting, when grieving. Sometimes it was just, actually a lot of times, at least for me, being the introvert, one of the most wonderful things for me was when somebody would just be physically there, but not needing to talk to me and coach me and fuss over me and like just be around. I don't want to talk. I don't want a therapy session from you. But just the fact that you showed up, that's so good for me. I don't need anything else, you know? And I think a lot of people were like, oh, I don't know what to say, or what do you need? I heard that question a lot. And I think people are encouraged to ask, and they probably should, but I felt very overwhelmed all the time when people were like, how can I help? What do you need? How can I help? And I was like, oh my gosh, I can barely move through this day and figure out what I'm supposed to do. I can't be in charge of you right now. Like I can't manage that.
Don't give me something else to think about.
So just an unconditional presence that didn't like need anything. That was a really wonderful, has continued to be a wonderful thing for me on the journey.
And that was a great lesson to learn, having experienced that and then realizing I was doing the same with my own kids. You know, like, I see there's something wrong. You should talk to me. We should talk.
Right.
Can I just guess and you just tell me if I'm close? Or what can I do to help you right now? You seem overwhelmed. Could it be this? Could it be this? And I just see my kids just shut down. And I'm like, oh, reminder to myself.
I know. It works both ways.
It's a lesson that we learn over and over again, right?
That's a great little segue, I think, into the sound off is we're just learning. We're just figuring it out. You know, we're 11 years into this journey and still figuring it out. One other thing, though, about the topic of grief, I remember one of our friends, somebody that you and I really love, and have had a wonderful friendship with over the years, who's not a family of loss, not part of that San Diego community even. I remember one time she bristled when I mentioned that we were grieving, you know, because this was like, I don't know, maybe like 4 or 5 years ago. We're still grieving families. And she was like, no, you're not. You know, because we look so functional, right. You know, we worked with this person and she was like, no, you've got it together. And I was like, well, A, I'm really flattered that you think that.
Right.
I think that's great. And I'll share that with Alyssa because she'll feel really good about it too. But at the same time, no, this is our thing. Sadly, we're always going to miss our girls. Mm-hmm. Always. We will grieve them, like you said, until that wonderful moment when we are holding them in our arms again. And I cannot wait for that day.
Yeah.
But yeah, don't just think because your friend has made it 5 years past a terrible loss that they're not grieving anymore.
Yes. And I would say if I had to sound off on anything, it's making assumptions about someone else's process is better kept in your own mind rather than being verbalized.
Yeah, because it's probably wrong. Your assumptions like this one, you know, are probably just totally off base. You have no idea.
Yeah. And it's one thing to ask a question, but to assume something, that is where you take one on the chin. When you're receiving it, you're like, that one's tough. And I've had a lot of people make some interesting commentary on what their assumptions are on my own grieving process, you know, and that has taught me a lot about vocalizing my assumptions about anyone's process and that I don't have the right to do that. And, you know, even what I was doing before you and I were talking today, I've been cleaning this area. So we have this one space that wasn't being utilized. It's kind of like where all the different, I don't know, vents and stuff. It's like an attic space, but it's not in the attic. Yeah. It's like on the side of this bonus room that we have, but everything filters through. But it's this huge, large space. So I have created this craft room in there for all of our stuff and Emily's stuff. That's where I keep Emily's things.
Big crafter.
It's a big crafter. She was a big crafter. So we just have a ton of her craft stuff left over. And, you know, it's a way to connect with her. So I've never gotten rid of it, but it started to pile up and get messy. And I have been working on this for probably a year that I have been cleaning out that space. And I took everything out of that room into this main living room area that's next to it. And I've been slowly working on it for this whole year. And now we are getting a pool table. It's something we've been saving up and wanting for years and years and years. And I have to actually be done moving this stuff in there.
Oh, there's a timeline.
There's a timeline now because it's getting delivered right before Christmas. So I was up there. I have to slowly do it because I get so emotional.
Yeah.
So emotional when I do it. That is why this has taken me a full year. That is not my personality. I don't like clutter. I don't like things not done. But physically, it overwhelms me and I want to cry. And this is, you know, we're coming up on the 11th year anniversary on that. And here I am crying the last few days because I've had to pick up the pace and really push myself. And I'm sitting there making decisions. What do I do with this? Or where do I put this? And I'm flooded with emotions of her and her things and missing her. And then the anniversary is coming up. So, you know, I just will stop and I'll just start bawling. I just start bawling, crying, and, you know, Robbie will walk into a room and I'm crying and he's like, what? And I'm just like, I just miss her so much. You know, it happens all the time. Not as frequently as it used to, but to make an assumption that anything about grief is similar to what other people have. Like everyone is different and everyone's going to react to things differently. And so I've just learned to just be a better listener.
Mm-hmm. I think that those are words of wisdom to leave with folks. And they're simple to remember. It's just that grief is, you know, Julia Cook in one of the books that she gave our little girls at the time after the tragedy, that grief is like a snowflake. It's so different and unique and beautiful and sharp and pointy in some areas and icy cold in others. But it's just so, it's as unique as the person experiencing it. And I think, too, as unique as the one that you're grieving.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it.
Good thing to remember. Well, I cannot thank you enough. This is medicine for my soul, for us to have this time, especially this time of year, and just honor the fact that this journey continues and it ebbs and flows and changes. So this has been really something special for me, and I know for everybody listening, to hear from you again, Alyssa. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
This has been The Sound Off with Alyssa Parker.
We hope you enjoyed this powerful episode of The Sound Off with our very special guest, Alyssa Parker. Thank you to our season sponsor, the Door Security and Safety Foundation, for supporting this podcast, and thank you for listening and supporting our mission. Remember, school safety is a collective responsibility, and together we can make a difference. Subscribe now to The Sound Off to stay informed and be part of the movement for safe and sound schools. Until next time, stay safe, everybody. Stay safe and sound.